From the Church of the Nazarene and Mesoamerica Genesis, you're listening to the Worthless Servants Podcast.
Hello, and welcome back to the Worthless Servants Podcast. It is great to be with you, and today's a little bit different. Of course, we've had a lot of podcasts recently that have been very different. It really is. But first, we have to introduce ourselves. I'm Scott Armstrong, and to my right, no, I'm going to wait on her, and we're going to go to our left, which is AJ Fry.
Hey, guys.
Then across from me, Freya Galindo.
Hi there.
And Emily Armstrong.
Hey, everyone.
And I almost messed it up, but we have to always end with the famous and infamous.
Infamous.
Chelsea Fry.
Que pachuca potaluca.
Freya is right now. Eyes popping out.
I've been spending a lot of time with Mexican missionaries.
You can hear that.
Yes, we know.
So, Freya, can you explain this? I mean, what just happened?
That phrase is, you mean like, what's up?
Uh-huh.
That's basically what you mean. But then Pachuca and Toluca are cities in Mexico.
Yes.
So in Spanish, we would say ¿qué pasó? Instead of what's up. So ¿qué pasó? Instead of saying pasó, you say Pachuca, mm-hmm. right? And then you just add por Toluca.
Because it rhymes.
Yeah.
And but the most important piece I have learned is the accent.
Yeah. She said
you
it
Toluca.
Right. Yeah, Toluca.
She's been practicing every night.
For 1 month.
Yeah, yeah.
Seriously.
That's awesome. Well, today is a little different. You know, Chelsea just said that we've spent some time with some missionaries, and we've been in a re-entry retreat with some of the missionaries that have returned from Santiago, Dominican Republic, and Guadalajara, Mexico. And they have served 2 years, and they, just perhaps because they're maybe not confident in English to share all of the testimonies that they've shared with us in Spanish, we're going to maybe just share ourselves just what has impacted us by listening to their stories. We should let you know that there were three in Guadalajara. There was Laritza, who is from San Juan de la Maguana, Dominican Republic. There was Nacieli, who is from the south, or Chiapas, Mexico. And there was Natalie, who was from the east, or Oriente, of Mexico, and they went to Guadalajara. And then we're also talking about Wendy from Santo Domingo going up to Santiago, just 2 hours away in Dominican Republic, but probably, she would say, still some culture shock there. And then Suje Barron, that was from Monterrey, Mexico, and came here to Dominican Republic, to Santiago. So let's kind of start. AJ, I think one thing that hit home with you was just how all of them experienced culture shock when they got there, but still were able to get past that.
Yeah, I really liked what they shared about their experiences, like their initial experiences when they arrived. Some of them said, like, the transportation was different. Mm-hmm. Laritza, who is from a smaller town here in Dominican Republic, went to a big town in Mexico, a big city in Mexico, and she said it was just so different, like the way the transportation worked, the way the people moved around the city, even the words they used for transportation were different. Here they call them guaguas. There they called them, like, trucks or camiones.
Well, even the pace was different,
yeah.
right? Like, she even got left by
right.
a bus, right?
Yeah, like, the buses here, transportation here, waits on people to get on board. But I guess there they don't wait so much. So the door, like, literally closed in her face, and she was left by herself on the side of the road. And her other other missionaries that were with her had to, like, walk back to her bus stop where she was waiting because she was just left there. So
that would so be me. Let's be honest.
But how many times?
That would be the problem.
Yeah, and even, like, Wendy, who's from the Dominican Republic but not from the same town, and there were two other girls that were from Mexico but went to a different city, they said even they experienced culture shock in their same country that they born and grew up in. And I thought that was interesting. Just they said different things. Their accent was different. You know, I mean, it's the same in the States, too, anywhere you go. But I thought that was very interesting that they experienced a different culture, even they just moved cities.
And they've been really honest with us. Some mm-hmm. of the culture shock was within themselves yeah. as a team. Mm-hmm. And it's cool to see them come back. And there's been some really good healing that's taken place. But initially, there was a lot of conflict. Now they're really good friends mm-hmm. and even family. Emily, you've talked about sometimes before, maybe you won't become best friends, but you need to be like sisters in this case. All were female. I don't know if you'd like to share a little bit about that.
Well, one thing I always tell missionaries as they're going out, and one of the biggest pieces of Genesis strategy currently when we send missionaries is we send a team of missionaries. We're not sending them by themselves. And typically our teams are made up of different cultures, which is why you have the culture shock mm-hmm. issue that's even in your own home. Like you're not just yeah. getting used to your own new city or whatever, you're getting used to like this space that I'm sharing that's personal mm-hmm. is very different as well. And obviously that can create just a lot of conflict. We've talked about in other episodes with culture shock that conflict is a piece of that. That is mm-hmm. a stage of culture shock. So when you're trying to do teamwork things and you've got this conflict and I often send them out with the advice of right now, because we have them in training for about 4 weeks and they all love each other and they laugh a lot. And practical jokes are funny. And but when you like get down to the nitty gritty of, man, this is for 2 years, we are living this life, I don't know that I can handle that for 2 years, starts to really hit home. So I often tell them to, even though you're friends right now, you need to take the step of becoming brothers or sisters. Siblings is what we would say, you know, for all of that. And to me, it's always a very applicable thing, because when I have a disagreement with a friend, it would be easy to leave that friendship. If it was like, we just cannot resolve this, and you walk away and you don't have anything. But with a family member, you would not walk away from a family member. You would say, we are going to figure this out and we are going to go to the bitter end. So I think what I heard in a lot of their testimonies is they had those times, and that is very typical and normal for missionary service. But that they were able to find a way to create family even in the midst of.
Yeah, amazing. Now, when they first got there, they had some different strategies. We had trained them, mm-hmm. but then they were able to get to these two huge cities. And what were some of their strategies? I really liked listening to how they started to get to know the city and try to make an impact.
Yeah, to me, it was very interesting to listen to Natalie and Nash and Laritza as they were sharing about how when they first got there, they were trying to make some contacts. And then they had the idea to go to a family like development center, mm-hmm. like a community center that they had in Guadalajara. And this is an institution from the government. And so they started to work there as volunteers. Mm-hmm. And it to me was very interesting and very cool, because they were very involved with that center. So they were teaching English, they were teaching computer skills, they would
teach people how to read.
Yeah, how to read mm-hmm. and how to write. And also they were saying that they wouldn't only focus on that, but also they were cleaning the center and then just having conversations with the other people, and that helped them a lot to be involved with the community, to make new contacts, and to lead those people, not only to learn something new like to write or computer skills, but also to lead them to Christ. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that was very cool to me, how they were very involved with an institution that is not religious or is not with the church, mm-hmm. but they made this connection with them, and that helped their ministry.
So a traditional way of thinking about being a missionary or doing ministry is like, that would take you, some people would say that's taking you away from yes. true ministry, mm-hmm. right? But that really hit home with me, that they were saying, no, this is our ministry. Mm-hmm. And so the impact on that community was enormous. Do you feel like there were any other strategies that they shared that were really effective as they tried to get into the community?
Yeah, I think something that I noticed when we've been just talking with them and hearing their stories is they were mentioning within these past few days that there is not just like one way of doing evangelism. Mm-hmm. And it kind of came out of, they were like, well, you didn't teach us how to be evangelists. So, like, when we were here and, you know, we were kind of like, well, what do you mean? And just even listening to them, we heard how many different ways that they were a part of their community and that they were bringing Jesus to their community. Mm-hmm. And after listening to them for a while, like, even through what Freya was just saying, like, you can hear they were being teachers, they were being janitors. In Santiago, I know that they really connected with the Nazarene Compassionate Ministries and helped people receive vision care and even eye surgery, like cataract surgeries, that was a part of Nazarene Compassionate Ministries that they didn't have to pay for. And so, you know, there were times that they were being like nurses and, and doctors. And I remember Suhe said whenever somebody was sick, they would always be, oh, well, go get the missionaries. They're going to know what to do. And they're like, we don't know what to do.
All things to all people.
Yeah. Exactly. And so I think, you know, after we have heard some of their things, it's always good for me to hear how much God has pressed them outside of their box. I think when we think about missions and what that means, it's, and we ask people all the time, especially kids when we're with kids, what's a missionary do? And they always say, they go around the world and tell people about Jesus, but it takes so many forms. Mm-hmm. Like, it looks so different. And through hearing these women's testimony of the way that they would just sit with people and go and have a cup of coffee with them in the afternoon, and how that was the what broke open a relationship of, you know, you've been here in my home for 4 months in a row, and finally it gets to this point of like, why are you doing this? You know, and it's like, this is the moment that we had to create and that we had to ask God to bless so that you open up your heart to what God's doing in this place. And those stories were not just like one, like the stories that they're telling. They are dozens of stories of those types of instances. And God is very faithful and is growing those churches that they are leaving behind in Santiago and Guadalajara.
The impact wasn't just on the cities or those who didn't know Christ either. I was amazed to hear that a lot of the existing churches and even leaders were impacted as well. Is anything come to mind when you guys think about that?
Yeah, for me, so the girls in Santiago, I got a firsthand witness with them because they're here and we actually worked with them. Mm. So my experience comes from them. But the district superintendent there, his name is Samuel, the girls were saying when he picked them up to take them to Santiago, he was like, oh, are you guys the ones that are going to plant the church?
like doubting?
Yes. Which that even sets the stage even better because the girls have, I have heard them say over and over again how much he played a part in their ministry, how much he became not only their, like, semi-boss, but like their pastor, their leader, their person that they went to with emotional needs, spiritual needs, everything in between. And he was there for when they were hurting and just when the church was growing, he was there to rejoice. And me personally, I love this because I got to meet Samuel and work with him. Mm. We went for a week and worked with a team there. And This man is busy. He's in charge of an entire district of churches. And he came out one day in, like, old clothes and was digging dirt in the mud. He would, like, take shovels away from people because they weren't working fast enough. Like, he saw the need and he went to meet it. And it had nothing to do with his position of leadership or anything, but he believed in these girls. And what it was even cooler than any of that was afterwards we got to talk with him and his wife, and I asked him, what is this, at that point, a year and a half, what has this year and a half meant to you? And his concept of church planting has completely shifted. It is not building based. It is not even pastoral based. It is meeting people that need to know Christ and reaching that need. And so that was really cool to hear him verbalize the concepts of Genesis and not be a Genesis missionary.
Right.
His perspective had shifted on what is the church and what is the purpose of the church and how can we reach the city. I think I think the entire district will be different because of his leadership and because of his involvement with Genesis, which is really cool. So those girls have no clue how big of an impact their lives and their testimony in his life will be on that entire district and maybe even this entire country. So it's pretty cool.
Guadalajara had a similar testimony in a different way, though, because they were saying with the existing church of how when they left something that they had been working for 2 years and they had gotten to the point of, like, this is just not going to work. And sometimes that happens. Like, we have to admit, right? Like, sometimes we do something that you just have to say, this is not the time, and we have to pull out. And they had thought they had gotten to that point. But now as they've left, they see because they're leaving and they stuck through it and they persevered that the existing church has said, we're going to take care of this congregation. And it's a church that maybe wasn't mobilized super well in mission before Genesis got there, but because of the example of being in the family development center, they said, you know, we need to go and take our places there and we need to know this community better. And it's not just coming once a week. We understand that we need to have presence in this community.
That's cool.
So it's exciting to hear how even existing church and leaders are starting to catch the vision.
That's really cool. There were a few stories that maybe stuck out to me. I remember one story that Suhei was telling us, and I think it was in response to the question, when did you know this is what God had called you to? I mean, you knew beforehand to be able to get on a plane and raise all the money and be a volunteer for 2 years, but when was the confirmation? And Emily, you were there, I think, when she was sharing that. Could you share that story?
Yeah, Suhei had a powerful story of somebody that they had been ministering with in the community of Vanegas. And they had been there for about a year, she said, and had been constantly in contact with one specific family. And the husband of the family had a terminal cancer. And so they had been walking with him through this process of deteriorating health, basically. They they were praying for him every week. They would go into his home and lay hands. And even her her testimony of the faith that they had that, you know, if God wants to heal his body, that they were constantly speaking very God powerful words in those circumstances. But she had to go one day by herself because Wendy had gotten sick. And they never went to these places by themselves. We talk about the city often and just how dangerous it can be to be by yourself. And Vanegas was a community that, with all the public transportation, took her about 45 minutes to get there and to do that at night. But she said, I just feel like I really need to go. I just need to be there tonight. And she didn't allow, you know, Wendy's sickness to say, well, we're going to empower somebody else tonight and we'll just make a phone call and I'm going to stay. And when she arrived in the community, she went straight to that house. And she was with the gentleman. And she said by the time that she had gotten there, she spoke with the wife. And the wife said, for 3 days, he has not said anything. And he has not eaten. And they basically knew that he was on his deathbed. They were just waiting for him to die. His skin was very yellow and sallow. I don't know if you guys have been in a room where death is just imminent. I have been in a room. I've been in a cancer room where death is imminent. And so I can have a feeling of what Suhei walked into. And as she shared of, she was so overwhelmed. She didn't know what she was going to do and she didn't know how to pray, but God had laid on her heart earlier that she was supposed to talk with this man about death and judgment and, like, this is a piece of something that is coming into your path very soon. And she resisted at the time and she said she never really had the courage to do it and she felt really guilty because now she's watching this man that's on his deathbed. And so she said she just reached out and took his hand and started praying, and she was praying for God's mercy, that God would have mercy on his life. And he's been unconscious for 3 days. And she said when she took his hand and started praying that he opened his eyes. And he opened his eyes and he said, my forehead needs to touch the floor. my forehead needs to touch the floor. He was very adamant. My forehead needs to touch the floor. And it kind of shocked her and didn't know quite what she needed to do. And so she just kind of was trying to make him more comfortable, and he became more adamant. And so after consulting with the wife, they decided to try and flip him over in the bed, because he's obviously very, you know, she even said he wasn't dressed anymore. He's very thin and fragile. He's been battling lung cancer for a year. And so they flipped him over in the bed so that he could at least feel like his forehead was up against the mattress, and he just resisted, and he said, I need to be on the floor, like on the floor. He kept saying, the floor, the floor. And so they didn't quite know what to do, but they just thought, well, this is something that we need to do. So as they were getting him down to the floor as well as they could, trying not to hurt him, and Suhei mentioned that God just brought into her mind the verse that every knee will bow and every tongue will confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. And God brought that passage into her mind, and she could see the spiritual battle in this man's life. He was dying, and she could see a spiritual battle taking place of his knees are being forced to bow to the lordship of Jesus Christ. And she continued to pray, and he had enough lucidity, a moment of knowing what was going on, that he said, I need to know that I am forgiven of my sin. I need to have Jesus Christ as my Savior. And they prayed, and he had enough moments that she is very sure that he was forgiven of sin. Mm-hmm. And she said the moment that he was forgiven and he knew he was forgiven, he just fell asleep on the floor. Mm-hmm. And she said after that, he never woke up again. And he didn't die immediately, but they put him back in bed. And after a few hours, he did pass away. But that was his last moment. And just her sharing that very real spiritual battle. And even what she said that impacted me the most was she knew that she had arrived, because somebody that had made a pact with Satan needed to create a pact with God. And I think that's what the mission is for all of us. Of anybody that does not have a relationship with Jesus Christ, you cannot serve two kingdoms. You're serving one or the other. And to be able to hear Suhei's confirmation of mission, confirmation of why God's brought me here for such a time as this, is powerful. And I think it's something that encourages us to continue moving forward in mission.
It really was a story that impacted all of us, and there were several of those. I mean, we don't have time to share all of them, but we wanted to, at least in this episode, give you a taste of what we've experienced. Mm-hmm. These people have been on the front lines. They've given their lives. They've persevered. Some of them, Natalie, had difficult sicknesses.
Mm-hmm. Like viruses that you never get.
Yeah.
As an adult.
I mean, I didn't even know of some of them, and she's telling us of some of them. And they persevered. And these cities are different, yes, because of them. And we wanted you to get a taste of that. I'm going to ask Chelsea, do you know how they can, if they're listening, people are listening to this and want to kind of share with us or want to, get a hold of us in any way, how can they continue the dialogue?
Yeah, a great place to find us is on our Facebook page and Twitter. You can find us at Worthless Servants Podcast. We have the same handle on both. Or you can find the podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. Or you can find us on our website at www.mesoamericagenesis.org/podcast. Or you can just check out the whole website if you want.
It's a pretty good website. Shout out to Emily, who taught herself how to do the whole thing.
But guys, we really want to see your interaction on our Facebook page. So make sure you comment. Let us know your opinions on things. And if you want to give me any new greetings, that would be really helpful.
She's running out.
Honestly, this last one was amazing. So I don't know how you're going to be able to talk.
You might just need to move right back into the normal. You need to end on a high note.
Well, we are the Worthless Servants. This has been awesome. I'm Scott Armstrong.
I'm AJ Fry.
I'm Freya Galindo.
I'm Emily Armstrong.
And I'm Chelsea Fry.
And we'll talk with you next time.
For more information, visit us on Facebook or at MesoamericaGenesis.org.